This is A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. Open, authentic, and engaging conversations about autism. Made for autistic people, parents, and carers of children on the autism spectrum. Welcome to A Different Brilliant.
Welcome to A Different Brilliant. I am your host, Madeline Jane Lobsey, and I'm very excited today to be joined by a couple of people for a very important conversation, which is a big deal for the autistic community. I'm joined today by Christy Kelly, and Christy is the manager of the Aspect Autism Friendly Employment Service, and her work is about getting employers to actually understand what's blocking neurodivergent candidates, and then doing something about it through resources, training, and partnerships or collaborations. And then I'm also joined by,
I can say hello.
Madeline. You can. Hello. I'm also joined by Jana Zavarowska. And Jana is the Director of Customer Success. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Principal Architect at HireVue Australia. And she works with organisations to design hiring processes that are fairer, more human, and less likely to filter out the wrong people for the wrong reasons. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Well, we're going to talk about something that is important because many autistic people are highly capable, and I really know I'm stating the obvious here, but we are highly capable and we are motivated and extraordinary skill sets, and we're ready to work. So we're going to talk about why don't we make it through the door, you know, statistically, how come we don't get through that recruitment process and through the door? And then I guess start to have a look at whose problem is that really? So I guess we want to pull right out to the topic at first and go, what is it about the way that we currently recruit? And when I say we, I mean all employers across Australia. There's huge amounts of statistics about that that we can find. But what is it about the way we recruit that keeps filtering out exactly the people that we claim we want to include, you know, especially in a diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation? So what are the employers getting wrong about that without even realizing it? You want to go first?
I'll go first. Yeah. I'll jump in, Madeline. So I think, you know, to set the context, what we know is that autistic adults, as you say, have the capability and the motivation and the desire to want to work, but somehow are more than six times likely to be unemployed than those, you know, I guess other people who may not have a disability, but also the autistic cohort is more than twice as likely to be unemployed as others with disability as well. So you're right, something is getting in the way. And what is that?
I think you've got to just say that again, because it is it's a very sobering statistic.
It's incredibly sobering.
And I think for people like us who talk about it all the time, it just flies off the mouth now.
Yeah.
But you just said, say it again.
So autistic people in Australia are six times more likely to be unemployed than people who aren't autistic.
Wow.
But they're also twice as likely to be unemployed as other people with a disability. So they're actually the most marginalised from an economic opportunity perspective of any cohort in Australia, which is really sobering. And brings home that there's a systemic problem here that's getting in the way every day.
Yeah, I mean, I have to kind of let that sink in, you know, because that is a very lived experience for me. And the thousands and thousands and thousands of autistic people that I know and work with, that we're just not even getting in there. And, you know, I've read other statistics that say that 54% of autistic people, even with degrees, even with whatever qualification they need, never get a job. I mean, that's just unfathomable.
Yep.
We're doing something wrong. There's definitely something that's missing out there if that's, you know, the case that we're seeing.
Yeah. So what I guess the question is, in a broad way, what are they getting wrong? and obviously, and it is well-intentioned a lot of the time. Absolutely. We've got to say that. But what are they getting wrong and how come they don't realise it?
Yeah.
I mean, you go, Yana.
All I was going to say was we've seen it in the movies. We've seen it in the TV shows, a traditional interview where you've got someone in a suit and tie waiting with their physical paper CV in a waiting room that's very sterile. And all of a sudden they get called into an interview where there's five people staring directly at them. And it's nerve-wracking. It's terrifying. And they're asked all these sorts of questions on the spot that may or may not be relevant to what they actually need to do in a role. And it's terrifying. It's ridden with anxiety and it's nerve-wracking for anyone in that sort of situation. And believe it or not, there are still organizations that recruit that way today. And if you do look at modified, more modern traditional recruitment processes, many of them also still follow very similar approaches to that. And that's just not designed in the right way to benefit, I think, anyone in the world. There are very few roles that need to still think on their feet and come up with, you know, things on the spot without any sort of thought and research. And so I think that is definitely one of the core problems and issues we're seeing with organizations. As you said, maybe it's not, you know, with any sort of ill intent. They're wanting to do more. They're wanting to be more accessible, but it's just not something that they maybe considered or thought about and really practically designed in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's that good old this is the way we do it thing. And, you know, we know that, you know, there's all that conversation about we still do year 12 with exams at the end that everybody's going, why are we even doing that? Like you never have to do that again in your life. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then we talk about getting jobs. Well, this is the way you interview people. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows it's not really an effective way, but it is that this is the way we do it.
This is the way we've always done.
So I guess that's where we've got to start talking about the system change aspect of it. And I think, you know, for a very long time, the onus has been on the autistic people.
Yeah.
And, you know, this conversation is about, well, what are we going to do that's not, you know, the autistic person needing to deal with it? So we've started to open it up, but the way we recruit just keeps filtering out people, right? And I guess we want to know, how are they getting filtered out? I get the thing about the actual interview, but even before that, how are they getting filtered out immediately? Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think there's some stereotypes that probably still exist with employers. So what might be seen as career hopping, so not long-term sustained employment in your history. Mm. I think, you know, there is a bias that that means that an individual might be unreliable or not successful in those roles. And certainly a number of the people that I've chatted with where that may have been their history, it's not for any other reason than really not feeling understood, not feeling supported and not feeling included in those work environments. So it almost becomes a circle that just repeats itself, which, you know, again, is pretty sobering as well for that being the experience for people.
Yeah. And I think just to say the same thing another way, basically they've finally managed to get through a process, they get a job, and then the environments themselves are not designed for neurodivergent people. And, you know, I work a lot with people and I say everything ends up in your performance review.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that never need to end up in a performance review when we're doing it really well.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, why are people getting filtered out even before face-to-face interviewing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, to bring it to today specifically, we're seeing a lot of generative AI out there. And so from a recruiter's lens, they're seeing all these polished, brilliant resumes and everyone is the perfect candidate when it comes to having all these tools and resources available to them if they are using them for that. Mm. And not only that, but they're also using these tools to apply to hundreds of thousands of jobs at any one time. And so there's just an influx of candidates and perfect resumes. And it's very difficult from an organization standpoint to then be able to decipher who between that is the right candidate to bring in and actually put through forward to the process. And so I think that is a challenge in itself for organizations to tackle. And they haven't been able to tackle that properly yet just because of the radical change of technology and innovation that's happened. So I think that might be leading to some more kind of traditional things that we're seeing come back in place, like, you know, filtering people out through other screening tools, which may not be the right or fair way to do things. But it seems to be that they're struggling with the perfection and the volume, and it's, you know, impacting obviously everyone on there.
I never thought of that. That's huge. That's going to have an enormous impact.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to get deeper into it, but I guess the other thing to start us off with is we use words like inclusive employment a lot, Christy.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean in practice? And, you know, what does it take to take someone from a good intention to actually making change with inclusive employment? So let's start with a bit of a definition.
Yeah. Inclusive employment.
Yeah. What does it mean?
I think, well, the way I look at it is it's employment that works for everyone. So it doesn't matter, you know, if you're a parent who needs flexibility, inclusive employment would be able to support you with that. You know, if you're, you know, kind of part of the sandwich generation looking after elderly parents, it would support you with that. But equally, if you have a disability, be it, you know, neurodevelopmental or otherwise, it's an environment that would be supportive of that as well. And I think, you know,
and I do want to just pause and say, I think a misconception with inclusive employment is the percentage of people that hit the diversity, equity and inclusion bracket means you're an inclusive employer. What you're actually saying is inclusive employment is has a flex or a flexibility to be able to include people with all circumstances.
I think it's also built into the system. Madeline. So it's not, I mean, I've heard again, time and time again with interviews with autistic people that it's reliant on them to advocate for what they need to ensure that that environment is inclusive of them. You know, we're at Aspect are trying to think about it differently and think about how can we actually work with organisations so that they have a better understanding, understand what they can adjust in their systems and processes and approaches to work so that that individual might not have to share that they're autistic in the workplace but still gets what they need to be able to be successful, thrive and maintain that employment opportunity as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to say is that, you know, part of your job at the Aspect Autism for Any Employment is to start taking the weight off the burden or the burden off the autistic person and actually start to deal practically with some of that systems change stuff.
We see a lot of that. So I think that was a really huge thing that came up when we were discussing the best practices guide. A lot of organizations, they don't know. And maybe there's other things as well that they haven't considered. And so often, more often than not, they're just saying, you know, if you require a more flexible process or accommodations, please just contact us. And so they put the power back. Well, they believe they're putting the power back in the hands of someone that needs to request it. But really, you know, there should be other ways to deliver it, to give the choice rather than, you know, having someone to put up their hand and say, hey, look, I need a different way of doing things. How can we, you know, facilitate that as well?
Yeah. And I think that's really important, the thing you said, because, you know, you are, the two of you and others are beginning to gather some expertise in what's going to make a difference. But that doesn't mean an autistic person knows that. And so if you ask anybody, just tell us what you need. What do you need, Yana? You know, you might have absolutely no idea what the answer to that question is. So you're never going to ask for something you can't even work out what you want or what you need.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you don't know the options as well. You know, you could, you say you want this and that and they'll go, sorry, we can't do that. So
with a lifetime of masking and tolerating and having to live in a world that's not designed for you. So much of it is blind to the person themselves because you've just had to work it out and survive and navigate.
Adeline, just on that point, whilst, you know, the service that I'm working on and collaborating with partners on and that sort of thing, whilst we know we're trying to hardwire almost and embed these approaches within an organisation's culture and systems and practices, it's not just going to be for the benefit of autistic people. We know the sorts of things that are best practice are actually going to benefit everybody. Again, that comes back to that inclusive employment. So whilst we might be looking at it through the lens of what supports an autistic individual entering the workforce or starting in that organisation, the benefits of that will actually be far, far broader.
Yeah, I think you can't say that enough. Mm. Yeah. So let's then look at, so like you said, collaborators or partners, how did you two get together? What's that about?
Oh, yeah. It's like a dating story.
Yeah. We swiped right. Yeah, I mean, it's... I went to a conference one time and one of Christy's colleagues, David, was actually speaking at the conference, and the entire time I was just in awe of everything he was presenting. And a little bit to what you just said, Christy, it wasn't reinventing the wheel. It wasn't just talking to a certain demographic, you know, of people. It was, you know, this is going to impact everyone and in such a simple, quick way, like, and no one's taking advantage of it. Well, there are, but the majority of people and organizations aren't doing what we're saying will, you know, work in their favor. And so I just immediately reached out and tried to find a way to connect with David, and he passed me along to Christy, and we just said, you know, what can we do to get the message out there? What can we do to partner and actually build, you know, something that we can distribute and help organizations, you know, flip the switch on this and really take a practical approach with actual recommendations and incorporate this into their hiring process to really, you know, it reinvent something and really make things better for them. So
yeah, and if you're an autistic person listening or a parent of an autistic person, why is this an exciting collaboration? Like, how is this going to benefit us as a community?
I think exactly what we were saying, like, this will just take a structured, fair, unbiased approach to hiring and really give more access to individuals in the recruitment process. It will make organizations be fairer and more considerate into how they can increase talent coming into their, you know, hiring pools, and really just give, you know, individuals the opportunity that they deserve to go through an interview and really do a good job and get hired there.
Yeah. So am I right to say, if I said this in a really basic way, you're on the recruitment end and you're on the other side.
Yep.
And the collaboration, knowing what each other's doing and creating resources around that is where the value is.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for you, what's the value of the collaboration from your end, Christy?
Yeah, I think it's about, well, certainly working with HireVue, there's been so much curiosity to understand and learn and think about how you might be able to do things differently and how you might be able to influence, you know, professionals and organisations to do things differently as well. I think, you know, from an Aspect perspective, we bring a lot of lived experience. So all of what we're talking about today has been worked through with a number of my colleagues who identify as autistic and neurodivergent. And so I think, you know, hearing those stories and those firsthand experiences actually, I guess, strengthens our understanding as well of the impact that this can have in the market. And I think it's really the opportunity to partner alongside somebody who wants to see the change as much as what we do and is really helping us to be able to mobilize that change and get it out there.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, like I said, the autistic people listening and certainly people that work, you know, love someone autistic, spend time with autistic people, none of what we're saying, I think, will be new to them. But I do think it's important to state it. You know, let's stop being conceptual and actually say, what are the actual barriers? What happens in the recruitment process that knocks someone out?
The thing I see a lot of, especially with tech organizations, is these buzzwords in in job descriptions and application forms. So they're looking for rock stars that are going to come aboard their rocket ship and take them to the moon. And you know,
oh, I'm not a rocket scientist. That's me out.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just not, you know, it's not bringing in anyone except for a type of person that maybe they've got in their head that is the right person for that role. And so it's incredibly biased and does not open the doors to the right people to apply for the role.
So non-literal language, being really poetic.
Exactly.
What are some of the other barriers that they face in reality?
I think if we're talking about in the hiring process, a lot of the constraints around thinking and preparing for an interview, needing to maybe, if we're talking about a digital approach, give them a very short preparation or understanding time to read a question and quickly respond, you know, having to undergo a video interview if that's not the flexible kind of environment where they maybe don't want to be on camera and kind of present to that. So I think it's also the design of what the actual interviews look like that might be a barrier as well in many sort of situations.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, we talk about this a lot within the autistic community, but just that, you know, the simplest thing in the world you can do, which obviously benefits everyone, is give us the questions before the interview.
Yeah. Something
it's radical, isn't it? It's radical.
There's so many organizations that just, they're so against it because again, we've always done it that way. When they think about traditional recruitment, they go, well, if you open the door and sat there in front of the interviewers, would you have had the questions beforehand? And you're like, but that's, it's not the point, right? We're changing the way recruitment is for the better. So we've got to forget what we've always done in the past and think about it in a new way.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, sharing those questions in advance. Mm. I think there's, again, some bias that, mm-hmm. well, somebody's going to come up with the perfect AI response yes. to that question
yeah.
or, you know, they've got a head start yeah. and so they're going to perform better having that question. Yeah. I think, you know, I've got a legacy of, you know, a 20 plus year HR career. And I often think back and say, you know, many of the times when we interviewed, we were literally interviewing somebody's ability to think really quickly and to speak really confidently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither of which in many cases
and
were
even
probably,
crazy things like eye contact.
Yes. Correct. Eye contact, yeah. social conversation.
Yeah. Chit chat before.
Exactly. Body yeah. language, all of those sorts of things. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think again, that kind of thought process,
yeah.
yeah, it rules a lot of people out where those things might not come as naturally for individuals. And so, you know, providing those questions in advance, it actually just creates an equitable playing field. So I've got a colleague who would often tell me, you know, in past experiences, she would be worried if she'd needed to take a moment to think about a question and that that would be seen as being potentially, you know, inconsistent or, you know, not able to think quickly and all of those things. And, you know, she was just mentally scanning and taking the time to find the best response. And
yeah.
because she needed a little bit more time to do that, you know, the interpretation was that she wasn't the best candidate often. And so, yeah, it's thinking about how we can do those things, not just to support autistic people, as I said, but gosh, getting those questions in advance actually supports everybody. And
yeah.
I think also supports organisations being able to see the best of the people in front of them for the roles
yeah,
that
less,
they're looking
less
for.
Less interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say as you were talking, I was going, well, how quick is quick? Like, you know, in yep. being able to quickly yeah. respond. And yep. I was going, you know, how amazing would it be if every time someone asks us a question, we stopped?
Yeah.
We thought.
Yeah.
We processed
yeah.
and then we responded with a considered response.
Yeah.
The kinds of things that could happen in the world if we did that.
Yeah. And look, we know autistic people, you know, particularly with information processing, you know, a 30-second kind of gap is what they may actually need to be able to understand what's being asked of them, consider what they need to, you know, consider and then obviously respond. But in traditional hiring approaches, that 30 seconds, you know, is a sign of other things
yeah.
that
yeah.
often work against
and
that individual.
I mean, it's funny that that's the thought process because there's actually research and science that's come out to say that if, you know, someone does think of it, they have that more authentic that response. They're reflecting back on experiences that they've had, which are applicable to answering the question versus, you know, if someone just types something into generative AI and reads the perfect script, it's not actually perfect because they're not answering it to their own experiences. And so we have the science as well to say, hey, look, you know, this isn't the right approach, but yet still we see organizations having that legacy thinking and view of interviews in that way.
Yeah, I was very impacted once by, I was working with a 24-year-old woman who had a bunch of qualifications and had been to so many interviews, an autistic person, and never gotten a job.
Mm.
And she said, I fail every time in the interview. And I said, what? Like, what is it? And, she said a bunch of things very similarly to what we're saying now. And then I said to her, if you could be interviewed in any way,
how?
Well, how? Like, what would you want?
Mm.
And she said two things that just like knocked me back. I was like, this is so good. This is genius. And the first thing she said was I'd get all the questions and then make a video presentation, PowerPoint, Canva extravaganza response back to them. And I was like, how many skills does that show,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, how good is that? And then she said, or I'd be at a cafe with three other candidates and we would be in a conversation together so that we could see how we went as a team. And interacting with us, I was like, give this woman a job. Like, this was so good. And basic things too. They're not even radical.
No. Completely. No. I mean, we say rethink recruitment, but at the end of the day, it's just doing things slightly differently with more intention to make it more meaningful.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a curly one that I wasn't going to ask, right? If I'm an autistic person there and I've got one of these ideas, do I rock up to Hiveview and go, listen, I want to get interviewed like this? And what would happen if I did that?
I mean, please. I would love that personally. I'd say the same thing. You're hired. Look, if I'm honest, I think Hiveview does do a lot of those things, right? So we have a full suite of technology that we partner with our organizations on and figure out the right approaches or the right combination of things to put together. So something as an example is that we know psychometric assessments, the traditional way, are hundreds of thousands of multiple choice questions that someone has to sit an hour and kind of fill out bubbles for or figure out how to, you know, change cubes and things. And that doesn't work as an approach for many individuals. And so we have reimagined that, if you will, and created a games-based assessment where it's a lot more engaging. You know, for some, it might even be considered fun. It might be less stressful. And so there's a different, you know, way of doing things. And, you know, Hiveview as an organization loves exploring that. So if someone was to come to me and say, you know, I'd like to interview in this way or that way, we'd absolutely love to hear that and work with them to kind of design that and then take that on board and recommend that to the organizations that we work with.
Yeah, I think, look, this is another podcast, but I think it's why we are starting to end up with far more startups, far more founders, far more, because the capacity to innovate seems to be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's not the reality of most people in their jobs. So, Christy, if we were talking, you know, let's say there are people here that are listening that are employers, or you're an autistic person that wants to be able to advocate for yourself once you're in a job, what are some of the things that you're starting to go to work on to make those adjustments or accommodations once they're in?
Yeah, so to hardwire them before they even get there, really, Madeline. So, look, we take a really comprehensive approach. For us, it's really important that it's more than just tips and tricks of what an organisation can do. And that starts from everything around thinking around, you know, how does an organisation articulate how inclusive they are, so what their culture is like. What are the leaders doing and supporting every day? What are they also accountable for to support better experiences for their employees? We talk about building and developing better understanding in the workplace, not just with an organization, but with the leaders and the middle managers and the employees within that organization, so that, you know, whether they might think somebody is autistic or whether they know somebody is autistic, they just know and are more equipped to be able to support individuals without that person needing to ask for whatever it is that they may need. We look at things like policies, you know, how clear are they? How plain English are they? You know, how well formatted are they to make it really easy and accessible to, again, not just autistic people, but I think just everybody generally who maybe doesn't have a law degree and can't interpret, you know, all of the typical policies that I've seen over years. And then, you know, even all the way through to thinking about what does that work environment look like, and you know, what sort of things might you be able to adapt proactively? So I, you know, I just think an example at Aspect, we in our meeting rooms have dimmable lights, we have blinds that we can pull down. We know, irrespective of who we're meeting with, that we might need to adjust some of those things before everybody's in the meeting, or at least ask if that's something that might need to be adjusted, so that we're offering that up rather than expecting the person to come to us requesting those sorts of things as well. So a few examples, Madeline.
Yeah, so I think, again, to say it simply, it's like a consultant that comes into an organisation, looks at the lay of the land, looks at the policy, is looks at the environment and then goes, what would have this, without ever being asked for it, be a more autism-friendly environment?
Absolutely. What can we actually do now that changes the system, rethinks the process, recommunicates, things in a different way that's actually going to be better for autistic employees but for everybody as well?
Yeah, and to bust open any myths, we're talking about rewriting a couple of policies, right? Yeah. And we're talking about a dimmer switch. And we're not talking about, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but there's so much value to that because many organizations, I think, at least the recruitment teams that I work with, are potentially understaffed. And so they don't have the time to find, someone in the team to then learn and adopt all these practices and bring them on board. So having someone come in with that understanding is such a valuable tool for them, but also just because they don't know and they don't know who to ask the questions. I think many just wouldn't even think to dim the lights because it's not something they've been, told that that's going to impact an interview. So I think just that education as well around that is really valuable.
Yeah. Oh, my brain's going off in a thousand places because I'm thinking of all the things that are possible.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to the technology just for a second because I was thinking about, things. I know we've talked about AI a lot, but then we're now starting to create things that are other ways of inventing recruitment and are predominantly through technology. Mm-hmm. So what we do know about technology is that it can either reduce bias and make things more accessible or inclusive for people, but it can also automate it and embed it. So, how are you addressing that when you're designing these new things?
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing where we're constantly faced with every day as a technology organization that wants to better communities and the hiring process in the most fair and unbiased ways. And so the big thing that we have at the top of our mind is always, how do we balance technology with science? And by science, I mean, how do we validate what we're doing? How can we look at the data and the results behind the hiring decisions and actually then use that to review what algorithms or what technology or whatever systems are in place? And so the foundation of what we do when we work with an organization is what we call is a job analysis. And that's been really incredible as a shift and a focus in the recruitment world, where previously maybe they were looking for things like culture fit, or you would get asked, what's your favorite color or what makes you wake up in the morning? And there was nothing, behind that where science or data or evidence said that that would make that a good employee for the role. It had no impact on whether or not that individual could do the role. And so a lot of the shifting in the thinking in the recruitment in the last few years has been around this skills first approach or this task based approach, and understanding exactly what does that individual need to be successful in that role in day one. And so part of the work we do is very much a job analysis, where we identify what the role is, what
are the skills actually have to do.
Exactly. And how do we design?
That's wild. It's very radical. Around it. Very radical.
Just basic thinking. And so that's how we design our interview processes with organizations. We say, okay, can this individual do A, B, and C? Because they need to do A, B, and C in the role. Do they need eye contact to do that? No. Do they need to think on the spot to do that? No. So those things are not measured in the hiring process when we go through it. And so it's a very structured approach. Everyone is asked the same questions, if possible, so that everyone can be, fairly evaluated against one another, but then also giving the accessibility and the accommodation, the workflows in different ways. We've had organizations come and say, look, someone doesn't want to do a one-way video interview. And we go, great. What do they want to do? A phone interview. Okay. Ask the questions over the phone, very simple things like that, where we just ensure that it is very much ingrained in the science and the technology is just there to help facilitate that. Are they wanting to do it at the comfort of their own home? Do they want to do it in person? Do they want to do, more of a video or an audio or a games-based approach? That's all part of the design, but ultimately ingraining that in the skills and the tasks that they actually need for the job, and nothing beyond that.
Yeah, that's pretty inspiring. And the thing that I can hear in it, what you're not saying but is so loud, is the human beings in it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of humanity in it. And in all of this work you're doing, like, there's, you know, this cyclical nature of the recruitment, and then they get in the jobs and the working together. But there's also, you know, as I'm listening with the technology bit, what we know, people's fear about AI and all of those things, is that the more humanity's in there, the more humans in there, the more lived experience of autistic people, mm-hmm. and you know, other people that gets into those mm-hmm. technologies, then AI has a voice that is that voice. And without us in this cyclical nature mm-hmm. doing this work, there is nothing to pull from.
Yeah.
And it's why this thing is so critical, and the possibility that this partnership is so critical.
Yeah. And to that, I think technology, right? Everyone thinks technology these days is just for process efficiencies and speed and, you know, helping teams that are lean and small. But really it is so that we can have that human element, and we can focus on, you know, the technology helping in one way, but the human aspect being where the individuals can spend all their time and really devote that into the hiring process. So I think the balance between the candidate experience and the technology is really valuable and key here.
Okay, well then let's ask you, Christy, what does inclusive employment look like when we get it really right?
Yeah, it's a good question. So look, if I was to place myself in the shoes of somebody who might not have had access to inclusive employment, and I, you know, do now in this experience, you know, I have a strong sense of belonging, mm-hmm. To the team that I work with, but also to the organization, that, you know, I have the right levels of tools and resources available to me just intuitively rather than needing to ask for them, that the way an organization operates in terms of their meeting structures or their email etiquette or whatever the case may be is actually really clear. There's no hidden curriculum, I think. So, you know, there's not a lot of, you just have to learn it via osmosis, and if you haven't been told it, you should just know it. So, you know, things are very explicit and very clearly communicated. And I think at the end of the day, everybody just really gets what they need to be able to thrive in that environment. And again, you know, we're not saying that this only serves autistic people. It will serve, you know, people more broad than that, and will support.
Do you mean other people need time to think, Christy?
Maybe.
Who likes interviewing?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So, you know, I think that ultimately, you know, and an opportunity then for that person to have that role, feel like they're developing and growing their career in that role and thriving, and, you know, it being a meaningful part of their life.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to take something huge and complex and try and pull it all down into a few sentences.
Yeah.
But if someone is listening, maybe they're an employer, maybe they're a parent, maybe they've been at the end or the, you know, on the receiving end of a broken process. What do they do now? Where do they start? Let's try and do one each of, like, where do they go? What do they do? So how would you answer that question, Yana?
I mean, in two parts. If they're part of a hiring process that's broken, I definitely think the feedback should be given one way or another to all the organization. What I said was they don't know what they're not doing, or they don't know what's
the
wrong.
The organization doesn't. Yeah.
They don't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And probably no one's told them, right? So giving that feedback is, I think, crucial in this sort of it situation, or connecting them with Aspect in some sort of way to be able to do that consultation for them. But I think don't be demoralized by it. I mean, it's such an anxiety-ridden process, a nerve-wracking process to go through an interview. That's, you know, that's...
Or one full of resignation.
Absolutely.
You know, if you've been doing it over and over again and to keep gathering the energy.
Exactly.
To go again. Yeah.
It's part of life, unfortunately. I don't know a single person that has gotten a job without you know, at least one interview on, and we need to be able to change that. So I think just, you know, it's don't give up. look for organizations that maybe advertise themselves as autism friendly, organizations that are aware of the process that might be able to help, I guess, get that confidence back up and show them that it probably is the recruitment process that's broken in that sort of situation that's not helping or aiding them in any sort of way. So twofold there, in that definitely the organizations that are hiring need the feedback, but also, you know, keep going. It's a hard slog out there, definitely, to go through it.
Yeah. All right, Christy, what do they do?
I think don't give up.
Yeah.
And know that there are people and organizations who want it to be different.
Yeah.
And, you know, that feels a little like lip service because it really doesn't impact their experience and, you know, being demoralized and not hearing back from multiple interviews or applications. But I think, you know, the tide's not going to turn quickly here. And there are organizations out there who really want to do different and do better once they know. And so, yeah, it's thinking about how can you connect, build an understanding of who they might be, but also to the extent, again, we don't want to rely on individuals to have to advocate, but, you know, sharing that feedback is incredibly important so that, you know, when you know better, you can do better. I think, those are the things that I'd probably say, Madeline.
Yeah. And if I was going to personally answer as an autistic person, I would say we do live in a world where we will continue to need to advocate you just need to know that. And if you are going to have to continue to need to advocate at all times, then what is most critical are two things. One is having deep compassion for yourself and room and space to do whatever you need to do inside of that advocacy, and finding other autistic people because there's nothing better than community, you know, to get you. So, we really appreciate you in tackling what is a mighty systemic issue in our country and across the world, and for everything you're doing to make a difference with that. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. If you would like to learn more, visit our website, aspect.org.au, to listen to past episodes or send us a message. Make sure to like or subscribe to A Different Brilliant on your podcast app.